right. Welcome, everyone. We'll call the Transportation Committee to order. Today's hearing is being held on Friday, March 28th, 2025. The time is 3:06 p.m. We are in room 1100 of the Minnesota Senate building. And in accordance with the rules of the Senate, the following members will be participating remotely in today's hearing: Senator Nelson from Rochester, Senator Jasinski from Faribault, Senator Farnsworth from Hibbing, Senator McCune from Duluth, and Senator Johnson Stewart from Wayzata. A quorum is present. We are here, members, to hear one bill, Senate File 2068. Senator Latz, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and appreciate your hearing the bill here today. This bill started out as a specific response to a tragedy that happened in St. Louis Park, where a repeat DWI offender driving with a valid license got drunk again, drove through an outdoor patio at the Park Tavern in St. Louis Park, killed two of our valued community members, one of whom was a server at Park Tavern, one of whom was an employee at Methodist Hospital. Injured nine other people, and then kept driving until he hit an embankment on the other side of the patio. It turned out this individual had five prior DWIs. His most recent one had been in 2015. He'd gone through the six-year mandatory cancellation and interlock requirement, rehabilitated, and got valid driving privileges without an interlock requirement at the time that this incident happened. In the immediate aftermath, I was contacted by a number of people, including my representative and media, and asked what is going to be done about this. And it seemed to me the best approach to try to prevent future tragedies was to extend the interlock duration that's required once you get into repeat offenders, especially those with multiple repeat offenses. So we crafted a bill, actually no pun intended, but my representative is Larry Kraft. We came up with a bill that does a number of things like that. One is, on a graduated scale for repeat offenders, to lengthen the duration of interlock that's required when interlock is required. That duration is added by 1 year or 3 years addition, up to 10 years additional for DWIs, and under some circumstances even longer than that. Second provision was to change the look back period when determining when interlock is required. Under current law, if you have a prior within 10 years of the new incident, on the repeat or second offense, interlock is required. But what happens then is, especially when you've got older priors, two, three, four of them, they can be outside that look back period. And even though a person's demonstrated a lifetime or an extended period of time, decades even, of repeat offenses, they're still subject to a shorter interlock duration. So this bill proposes to extend the look back period to 20 years. Had that been in place at the time of this incident in St. Louis Park, the driver whose prior had been in 2015 would have still been on a 10-year interlock requirement at the time of this new offense, rather than driving free and clear with a valid driving privilege. The third thing that we tried to address was the financial barrier that many people face to getting on the Ignition Interlock program. Aside from the fact that Interlock itself has costs, the most significant cost of getting driving privileges reinstated, including with Interlock, is the $680 that is required under statute as a reinstatement fee. It's a combination of a couple different pieces, but it adds up to $680, and when you go to the driver and vehicle services, they add another $30 or so just for the new license application. So it gets pretty expensive, and our proposal here then is to not require that $680 to be paid up front, but rather to require that it be paid out over the time of the interlock program. program and at least paid in full before the interlock is over and a person is seeking to have full driving privileges without interlock. Next piece that we're looking at here has to do with the application of the interlock to criminal vehicular homicide. Under current law, it applies to repeat DWI cases, and it applies to criminal vehicular operation that are alcohol-related. It's been that way since the beginning of the interlock program. However, at the time that that was initiated, there was discomfort with extending interlock to those cases with criminal vehicular homicide, someone who drove drunk and killed someone in the process. I maintain that of all the people that we want driving with interlock rather than driving without interlock, it's the people that have caused the most egregious harm, killing someone else by driving while drunk. We know for a fact that the issue of driving after a revocation happens quite frequently. It's less frequent when people have interlock requirements because they have a path to have valid driving privileges, and many of them take that up. For those who are left off the table, they are faced with the choice of either driving without valid license and without interlock, just because they want to keep their job, they want to put food on the table, they need to take care of their family, or if we can do this, have them reinstate with interlock and drive with the safety device in place. The fact is, the national studies have shown, our experience in Minnesota has shown, interlock is the most significant safety device that we can use to prevent DWI drivers, prevent them from occurring at all. So that's here. So that's basically the bill that's before you. We've got some proposed adjustments to that as well. And I've got an amendment A7 that is a result of a number of pieces that have come along the way. And I'm happy to go through that when the committee is ready for me to do that and explain the basis for my proposed amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Latz. So I'll have Senator Johnson Stewart move the A7 amendment, and then Senator Latz, why don't you present it before we take the vote?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The A7 amendment seeks to address a couple of gaps in the statute, I guess, or glitches that have been brought to our attention since this DWI bill was introduced. What's happened is that practitioners, driver and vehicle services, and others have been looking closely at this area of the law and have identified a number of places where they feel, and I agree, that the statutes can be improved to advance the original intent of the statute and to clean up a few things that could work better. Section 9, with the first provision of the A7 amendment, would address a proceeding already allowed where a vehicle that is at the forfeiture stage because of repeat DWIs under current statute can be returned, not forfeited, if the person uses that vehicle, installs interlock, because then they will be restricted to driving only the vehicle with interlock. They'll have a vehicle they can use instead of losing a vehicle. They want to get reinstated quickly. They can get the vehicle returned promptly and not wait out a forfeiture process as well. What happens, however, in some cases, is that a vehicle gets seized, and it may be an older vehicle a person frankly doesn't want to keep any longer. Then they don't have an avenue under this statute to get a vehicle back and avoid the cost of the forfeiture. In one case that really prompted this draft was a vehicle that was inoperable after the incident, was seized for forfeiture, and of course returning it to the driver, the vehicle owner, would have made no sense because they couldn't install interlock and drive the vehicle anyway. So they were left without any options. At least if they were given the vehicle inoperable as it was, the vehicle could be parted out. The person could have more resources than to purchase a vehicle that could be used for this. Also, there was a gap in the statute in terms of forfeitures relating to non-cars, basically. What we propose here is language that would allow any motor vehicle eligible to be equipped with interlock device to be utilized for installation of interlock and therefore qualify for the driver to avoid the forfeiture and have that forfeiture vehicle returned to the offender. If we turn to page 2 of the amendment at the bottom, page 14, line 15 of the original bill will be amended to give more. This is actually a proposal from Driver and Vehicle Services, I believe, that would add suspension and cancellation to the terms revocation to give them the flexibility that they need in order to implement the interlock program properly. And then if we turn to the next page that follows up on the same language having to do with the extension determination. In some cases, if you're driving a vehicle with interlock and you get a violation that may involve a 0.02 a blow from potentially an interferent, and then that 15 minutes later the vehicle starts again, when that violation gets reported to DVS, they can extend the length, the duration of interlock by 30 days or even longer if there's been any priors like that. So some of this language is there to give them clarifying jurisdiction and authority to make that work. So I think that is all that we are trying to do with this amendment.
Members, any questions on the A7? Hearing and seeing none. All right, all in favor of the A7, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Sounds like the ayes have it. Everyone's got to turn on their microphone, by the way. And then I'll also mention, before I wrap the gavel, Senator Paz joining us from Brooklyn Park, Senator Lang from Olivia. The A7 passes. All right. Members, before we take any potential testimony, I'll just pause briefly to see if there are any questions for Senator Latz on his presentation of Senate File 2068. All right, hearing none, I will call for testimony. I don't have anyone signed up ahead of time, but anyone here who would like to testify, please come forward. All right. Oh, all right, please come forward.
Sorry, sir.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Charles Siegel. I'm a private defense attorney with about 30 years of experience in criminal law as a clerk, a prosecutor, a public defender, and private practice. I'm here today on behalf of a couple of organizations. I'm currently a member of the Minnesota Association for Criminal Defense Lawyers, which is an organization of approximately 250 criminal defense attorneys who seek to uphold constitutional rights and ensure equal justice for all. I'm also the current secretary and past president of the Minnesota Society for Criminal Justice, which is a college of over 50 defense attorneys who are nominated and elected based upon their knowledge and experience in defending those who are accused of crimes. We meet monthly and review current developments in law with a focus primarily on DWI defense work. I am present today to wholeheartedly support some of the provisions that Senator Latz has mentioned today, some of which I've even brought to his attention. There are also some things that we are opposed to, and I'll just kind of run down a little bit, and forgive me if it's a little out of order. First of all, as far as the 171.19 challenges, that's what Senator Latz was talking about adding to judicial review instead of just administrative review. I had an example that came up just last week that I'll just tell you about to explain why this is so necessary. I had a client who tested at 024 on the ignition interlock device. 1 hour later, he came back and he blew all zeros. It's relatively impossible scientifically for him to go from a 0.024 to a zero in 1 hour, which suggests that there was some interferent that caused that positive test. He had been notified of the extension and filed for administrative review, which is his only recourse right now. Under administrative review, they denied his request. They said that they were going to sustain the extension. And I will add that extensions are actually, first extension is 6 months, second is a year, third is a year and a half, and then you go cumulatively. So we literally have clients that are on this machine. They start out with 1 year, and suddenly they're looking at 10 years of being on this program. But in this particular case, he has no recourse other than to file for writ of certiorari to the Supreme Court, asking them to order judicial review of the matter, because he is only allowed one administrative review and they have ruled against him. So he really has no recourse, even though he has scientific proof that it was an interference. So I think this is a valid change to want to allow him to file a judicial challenge in addition to administrative. Senator Latz also explained in detail adding ignition interlock device program to the criminal vehicular homicide statute. There can be no better way to display how we want to make Minnesota roads safer than that these people that have been, for lack of a better way to put it, the most egregious conduct, that are having the longest license revocations or cancellations, that they have no legal avenue to drive right now. As we all know in Minnesota, most of us need to drive, especially in the rural areas. So all we have as recourse right now is for those drivers to drive illegally, which serves no public safety purpose. And so we feel that adding criminal vehicular homicide as an opportunity to be on the ignition interlock device program is serving a very valid public safety interest, and we support that. Where we do differ of opinion, though, has to do with the length of time and the look-back period. Senator Latz brought up the most tragic of scenarios, what happened at the Park Tavern. There's no way to describe it as anything but a tragedy. However, we look at it that currently they are on the ignition interlock device program for a certain amount of time right now, 1, 2, 3, or 6 years, depending on their offenses. If they violate the terms and conditions while they are on it, they will be extended, as we talked about, 6 months, a year, year and a half. And so by increasing the time that they are going to be on this program from 1 year to 2 year, or 2 years to 6 years, or even up to 10 years, what we are in essence doing is penalizing the compliant, because the folks that are going to violate the terms of the ignition interlock device program are going to have extensions added to them as it goes along. Somebody who's on the program for a year who is completely compliant is likely going to continue to be completely compliant for 2 years instead of one, which brings up the other big problem that we're finding. I also happen to be, I don't represent today the DWI task force, but I am the subcommittee chair for the ignition interlock device program. And what we are hearing from a lot of probation officers and others is that their clients aren't able to afford to be on the program. The problem is, and we are very much in favor of allowing them to pay the $680 during the period they are on the program, but unfortunately, what we're finding is that they just simply don't have the funds to do it. And so if we're going to extend that time, it seems to me that we're only going to exacerbate the problem and create more discouragement from wanting to be on the program in the first place. And so if we have somebody who's on the program for 1 year and is completely compliant, then I don't see the merit in adding an extra year to that other than it being financially punitive. Even looking at Senator Latz's example, the tragic events, as he pointed out, it had been almost 10 years since that gentleman had offended, and it's tragic, but the reality is that's really an outlier case. That doesn't happen that often where somebody goes more than 10 years without a new DWI offense. But when that more often happens is when they're young and they make a silly mistake, and then as they're a grown-up 20 years later, something comes up and suddenly they're facing a more serious license revocation. Most people that are going to reoffend are going to do it far sooner than 10 years. And so for purposes of this, to increase the time on the ignition interlock device program and to increase the look back period, in our opinion, simply punishes the compliant and doesn't address the underlying issue. Certainly having treatment and those things make sense, but increasing the punitive nature, which frankly it is, I don't believe does. And then finally, as far as the amendment to change the language of the vehicle forfeiture statute, that actually was a client of mine as well, where her vehicle was totaled in an accident. She has just completed 1 year of the ignition interlock device program on another vehicle that she purchased, and the State Patrol is still unwilling to turn back over her vehicle because she did not do the program on that particular vehicle. I can also see scenarios where they would be in a boat or on an ATV, and get this, you can't install those machines on boats and ATVs. And so we are telling them that 169A63, the subdivision 13 that allows them to get the exemption from the forfeiture, won't apply unless you are in a car and you use that car to be in the program. And that seems counterintuitive because it's going to create scenarios where they simply can't do that. And I don't think that was the legislative intent when Senator Latz first brought that. Thank you for your time. Sorry to drone on so long.
Thank you, Mr. Siegel. I did want to circle back on the reinstatement fee piece that you raised and asked Senator Latz. As I understand, there's a shifting in order of the payment of the fee. The fee is not required to participate in the ignition interlock, may be required at point of reinstatement. Can you help me understand that, Senator Latz?
Yes, Senator Dibble committee. Right now, there's a reinstatement fee of $250 and a surcharge of $430 that are required to be paid unless you have demonstrably qualified for a public defender level exemption in a payment plan. You have to pay all of it up front to get reinstated. So it ends up being a $700 outlay in addition to the costs of installing the interlock equipment and the monthly maintenance for the interlock equipment. It just ends up being prohibitive for a lot of people, and they will delay until they have the money or not even go through the process of reinstating. Some people, frankly, they've also got some old fines or other impediments to getting valid driving privileges, and this brings everything to a head, and they've got to get that stuff cleaned up too. So that $700 is quite a burden. The proposal here is to not require that to be paid up front. For those who are going to be required to use interlock if they get valid driving privileges. They could delay that payment to sometime during the interlock duration. We're still working a little bit on the language there. We're waiting for the fiscal note to come back, and we want to find out if we need to massage that to fit it in so that there is no fiscal impact on our budgeting process here. I tried a few years ago to change this reinstatement fee around, and depending on how you do it, it can have a pretty substantial fiscal impact on the Department of Public Safety's budget. And even when we did the splitting the payments in half provision over the course of a two-year period, we ran into some issues. So we may have to tweak that, but that's the purpose of it, is to let people, to eliminate at least the upfront barrier to getting into the interlock program. That's been one of the problems of the interlock program, and I have to agree with Mr. Siegel in that regard. It is a financial burden, the uptake is not as high as we would like it to be. We are all better off if someone's supposed to be on interlock, that they be on interlock and driving with the safety device in their vehicle, than if they're driving without valid driving privileges and without the interlock. So to the extent we can reduce the barrier to getting the interlock and encourage uptake, we're all better off.
I think that last statement was a hard concept for the state to grasp, the paradox of letting people drive, but the understanding that the alternative is people will drive without driving privileges. And
Mr. Chairman, the numbers are something like 70% of people who don't have valid driving privileges are driving anyway, because they got to keep their job, or they've got to get their kids to school or to their activities. They got to go to doctor's appointments, got to go to the grocery store, those kind of things. That's just the reality, and people take their chances on getting caught. 15 years ago or so, I took testimony in the Judiciary Committee from a public defender in Washington County who said something like 60% of his cases were driving after withdrawal cases. I mean, that's just the reality of it. So we're not going to stop people from driving after withdrawal if we can't, you know, on its own. If we can get them valid with Interlock, we're all safer. Right. Yeah, and the other thing Mr. Siegel's pointing out to me is once you get a driving after revo, the conviction suspends you even longer. You're incurring more fees for reinstatement, and you can just kind of keep digging the hole deeper and deeper. Mm-hmm. And we're all better off if we can help them get out of that hole, get driving validly.
You raised the subject of the fiscal notes that might accrue or occur as we reorder the collection of the reinstatement fee. Where does the $450 or $400-something surcharge go? Is that one of those carryovers from a budget fixing era from the bad old days, or where did that originate, and where do those funds flow?
Mr. Chairman, it's $430 is the surcharge, and my recollection is that goes into the general fund, but someone from fiscal can perhaps be more precise about that.
Boy, do you happen to know?
Or maybe the surcharge goes into some special fund and the reinstatement fee goes into the general fund. The original idea is to create a fee that covers the costs of reinstatement, not as just a financial grab from individuals, but maybe staff knows.
Mr. Chair, as Senator Lott says, that there's a $250 fee, which is split several ways, and then there's the $430 surcharge. It's a very confusing statute, so I'll try to wade through it quickly for you. The $250 fee is split 20% to the Driver and Vehicle Services operating account, 67% to the general fund, 8% to an account under the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension account, and then 5% to the vehicle forfeiture account in the Special Revenue Fund. And then the surcharge, $50 of the surcharge, goes to the traumatic brain injury and spinal cord injury account. And the remainder of the surcharge goes to the remote electronic alcohol monitoring program account in the Special Revenue Fund. But the commissioner can transfer the balance of that account on a monthly basis for deposit in the general fund.
Ms. Boyd, do you have any sense if there's an excess in the remote monitoring fund and it is swept over into the general fund, or is that too much to ask for the moment?
Mr. Chair, I don't have that information in front of me, but I can try to get it for you as this bill moves forward, but I'll find out what I can.
I'm just curious. So if you could, I would like to know, but we're not going to keep this bill here.
Okay.
Members, any questions for Senator Latz or Mr. Siegel? Oh, and I'll mention before I forget that Senator Howe is with us remotely, and he is in Rockville. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Latz. I totally agree with your bill. Probably the same concerns Mr. Siegel has, though, about the more lower offenses of, let's say, a 0.09, and then the look-back period of 20 years versus 10. And I see in the side-by-side for the current law, there's no limit as where the old law was. If it was a 0.16 and above, you'd look at this. So my concern is someone made a mistake, and they got a low-level D driving while intoxicated, let's say 0.09, and now they have 18 years later, they have another one that, you know, get pulled over, made another bad decision, and it's at another low level, let's say 0.09 or 0.10. What's the effect of that on with the new proposed legislation versus being before. If you could just comment on that, Senator Latz, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Jasinski, they would be considered a second offender under this bill, and they would face, I believe it would be a three-year ignition interlock requirement for a second offense. Currently, I think it's two.
Mr. Chair?
Siegel.
Mr. Siegel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, and I think what you're looking at, Senator, is that on a first offense right now, if you test at 0.16 or more, you are required to do the ignition interlock device program. But if you test less than that on your very first offense, you are not. As it stands right now, pretty much any repeat offense, regardless of whether your test was higher or lower, you will have to do the ignition interlock device program. What changes is the length of time you are on it. If your second offense is 0.16 or more, then you have to do double the amount of time than if it was less than 0.16. But in these lookbacks, we never consider what the test result was. It is never considered what the test result was on the first offense. It is simply the fact that you have what they call a qualified prior impaired driving incident. And so they just say whether you were 0.09 or 0.19 or 0.29, you've got a prior. And that's the way they look at it right now.
Senator Jasinski.
Thank you. And again, just my concern is going out 20 years seems excessive to me. I agree with Mr. Siegel's. If it's going to happen, it's probably going to happen within the first 10 years. So going out 20 years, I think, is excessive. That's just my comments. So thank you.
Thank you. Just a quick question. When does the clock start ticking on the look back? Does it start ticking at the end of the ignition interlock phase, or does it start ticking at the point of offense?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Siegel.
Thank you, sir. Currently, the way the law is set up, it was different earlier, but right now, when you are required to do the ignition interlock device program, your revocation period does not technically begin until you enter the program. So if you are required to do 3 years on the program, but you can't afford to do it right now and you wait 2, 3, 4 years to start it when you do have the money, you will still have to do 3 years on the program. You can't wait it out or anything like that. You simply have to do that. Now, as far as the look back period, the way it is set up right now is the 10 years basically starts on the date of conviction for the if you are convicted of the offense. If you are not convicted of the offense, then I believe the 10-year look-back period would start at the date of revocation, which currently is 7 days after the date of offense. With part of Senator Latz's proposal that we certainly are in favor of, it would change to 14 days after the date of offense.
Thank you. All right. Members, further questions? Senator Latz.
There's only one other point that I will note that's in the bill I didn't mention in the initial presentation, which is that the proposal would also, and this came from law enforcement, would be rather than impounding the plates of a motor vehicle when it's subject to plate impoundment, law enforcement would have the option of affixing a sticker over the license plate, invalidating the plate, and then the vehicle owner, when they get back home, could remove the plate, and this would avoid law enforcement having either to remove the plates at roadside or follow up with it, go to an impound lot, whatever, to get the plates.
I thought you had mentioned that, but maybe I read it and heard it in my head. So thank you for mentioning that aspect of the bill. One moment. All right. Anything further? Any further questions, members? All right. At this point, I'll do a final call for testimony. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 2068 who hasn't had an opportunity to do so? All right. Seeing none, I think I'm the only one who can call for a roll call unless there's a desire coming remotely. Okay. We'll do a voice vote. All right, so with that, Senator Johnson Stewart would move Senate File number 2068 as amended. All right, so I'll start that over. So Senator Johnson Stewart moves Senate file number 2068 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred back to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. All in favor say aye, and I'll pause to let you all unmute. Aye.
Aye.
Any more? All right, well, silence is assent. The motion passes. All right.
Aye.
All right. All right. Thank you, Senator Latz. Members will be back on Wednesday. Have a great weekend. We are adjourned.
Thank you.